Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where do you remember the great popularity of those old bumper stickers that said question authority? Do you remember the follow-up bumper stickers that said question everything? Should we question everything? I mean, a lot of people look at the disaster of Obamacare and say that's a very, very good illustration of why we should question absolutely everything. Except some people say no questioning in public schools of Darwin and evolution. Is that the right policy? Is that the necessary policy? That is a hot debate in this country. It's a hot debate in many states. No one anywhere that I have ever heard of says that teaching Darwin should be banned. But there is a very large group of Americans, and particularly of American academics, who believe that certain ways of teaching Darwinism ought to be banned. What's your position on that? Well, you can learn more about the whole debate by listening to two extraordinarily distinguished gentlemen. Stephen Meyer is the head of the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. He's the director there. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Darwin's Doubt, which reached number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. He received a PhD in the philosophy of science at Cambridge University. And Dr. Michael Shermer is publisher of Skeptic magazine. He's also a monthly columnist for Scientific American, an adjunct professor at Chapman University, and the author of Why Darwin Matters. Dr. Shermer has also been a guest on this show before. He's the author of The Believing Brain: From Ghosts, Gods, and Aliens to Conspiracies, Economics, and Politics, How the Brain Constructs Beliefs and Reinforces Them as Truths. Let me go first to Dr. Shermer. And Dr. Shermer, one of the questions that I would have, would assume, because your entire premise in Skeptic magazine, which is always lively and feisty and full of opinion, your entire premise is to question things. Why is it wrong to allow questioning of Darwinism?
Oh, it's not at all. There's lively scientific debates about Darwinism and neo-Darwinism and the neo-Darwinian synthesis, and to what extent genes play this role or that role, or to what extent the fossil record represents rapid change or slow change. Those kinds of debates already happen all the time. That the public's not aware of, because they're just general scientific debates. They don't have, say, religious or political implications, so nobody really cares that's not in the field. In the same way that debates go on in geology or physics or chemistry or whatever, most people are not aware of them because it's, you know, it's not their thing, unless it spills over into pop culture and in political or religious implications. So, but Darwinism was banned. It was against the law to teach it in Tennessee, for example, until 1925, when,
right,
you know, the Stokes trial.
That's a long time ago, but it's not banned now anywhere.
Nope, and the reason for that is because it's so well supported. In the same way that nobody would propose banning, say, teaching Newtonian physics. I mean, it would just be ridiculous to even...
Right, no one has proposed it, so let's not even talk about that. But do you believe that it is appropriate for a high school science teacher, say, to go ahead and teach the debate about Darwinism and the challenge of intelligent design?
I think it's an interesting subject to bring up as a cultural context, to say that in this way science is not just objectively neutral, that it has political and religious implications for a lot of people. And here's a great example, which being the century-long debate between creationists and evolutionists in the courtrooms, which the creationists have lost every case. But it's an interesting study culturally, historically, politically. But there's not really a scientific debate, because there's no science on the other side to teach. In the same way that at Skeptic, we get almost every week alternative theories of physics of people that think that Einstein was wrong and Newton was wrong and Hawking is wrong and so forth, and they've concocted their own theory, and they'd really like to get it published, they'd really like to get it in textbooks and taught in classes, and they're frustrated that they, as rebels and renegades, do not get the attention that they seek. And the reason is because they're not in science. They're not publishing in peer-reviewed journals. They're not compiling evidence and experimental data that scientists would accept and so on. So it's really in the same vein that it's not that there's anybody banning anything, like you're not allowed to teach creationism or something like that. It's that it's just not taught. There's nothing to teach. It's not in textbooks. It's not in mainstream literature and so on. So it's just not accepted. That's why.
Stephen Meyer, your response to what Dr. Shermer has put forward, it's there's no ban, there's no restrictions on teaching debates about Darwinism?
Well, yeah, let me bring this into a little tighter focus. There's a big controversy right now going on in the great state of Texas, which is a huge textbook adoption state. And back in 2009, the debate really started because there was a longstanding recommendation in the Texas State Board of Education, rather the Texas State Science Standards, to encourage teachers to teach the strengths and the weaknesses of competing scientific theories. In 2009, the Darwin-only education lobby turned out in force to pressure the board to change those standards, saying that Darwinism in particular had no scientific weaknesses. Eugenie Scott of the National Center for Science Education was quoted in the Dallas Morning News as saying, you couldn't apply this standard to Darwinian evolution because there are no scientific weaknesses in the theory of evolution. As a result, there was a big push to get the state board to change the language of teaching strengths and weaknesses and the recommendation to encourage students to evaluate and analyze scientific theories. And in the case of evolution, the language was replaced with the language unqualified affirmation. In other words, students were told that they should, or that the standard now said that they should learn to recognize and identify the evidence for evolutionary theory. Now, I was called to testify in 2009 about the proposed change to this more dogmatic approach to teaching the theory. And I presented in evidence 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles that were critiquing key tenets of neo-Darwinism, the main textbook version, the textbook version of evolutionary theory that we all learn. And I argued that in virtue of the very widespread critique of neo-Darwinian evolution that is in the literature, that it was entirely appropriate for students to learn about the weaknesses of the theory and to learn to critically analyze and evaluate it. And so actually, in contradiction to what Michael has said, it sounds like we might agree on a lot of the basic principles of science education. But there is, in fact, a concerted effort to ban any criticism of the theory. Many teachers have gotten in trouble for raising criticisms of the theory. And in contrast to that position, or that policy, our policy is very simple, that students should learn about the positive arguments for neo-Darwinism, but they should also be allowed to learn about the scientific weaknesses or critiques of the theory as we now find them being expressed in the peer-reviewed scientific literature.
Okay, look, Stephen, let me just get something very clear here and get this on the table.
Yeah, you bet.
You do not advocate that a teacher who chooses not to question Darwinism should be forced to question it, do you?
No, but these standards were encouraging teachers to expose students to critical evaluation, strengths and weaknesses. So let me, you know, I know Michael has just, other Michael, Shermer, has presented the idea that really the only questioning of Darwinism is occurring around the edges. But let me just read a short quotation from really leading scientists in the country, Eugene Koonin of the National Center for Biotechnology Information at the National Institutes of Health. And in a 2009 article, this is one of the ones that I presented, in Trends in Genetics, he pointed out that all the core tenets of neo-Darwinism have broken down. The traditional concept of the tree of life, the idea that natural selection is the main driving force of evolution, and he went on to say that all major tenets of the modern synthesis, that's technical term for neo-Darwinism, have been, if not outright overturned, replaced by new and incomparably more a complex vision of the key aspects of evolution. Now, are students going to be, can they learn about that, or do they have to learn this tired old textbook version? And are they going to be prevented from learning about the criticisms of the theory as they are being presented in the scientific literature? To us, it's just a matter of basic scientific literacy. We don't want to be teaching neo-Darwinism as a kind of dogma. But unfortunately, in all too many cases, in the textbooks and in many states, that's exactly what happens.
Okay, we will get a response from Michael Shermer. Michael Shermer is the editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine. We're also speaking with Stephen Meyer, the head of the Center for Science and Culture of a Discovery Institute. The debate, how should scientific theories be taught? Should Darwinism only be taught with affirmation? In other words, you're basically saying, yep, this is the truth, get used to it. Or should questions be presented if teachers choose? We'll get a response from Michael Shermer. If you want to participate in the conversation, you can call.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
One minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, talking about questions you're allowed to raise and questions that shouldn't be raised in a classroom. But there is one question that should be raised everywhere, which is, why would you want to pay for a pushy, pricey interior decorator when you can get a free face-to-face video consultation at Blinds.com? All you have to do is schedule some time with a Blinds.com decorator and connect using your tablet or smartphone's video cam. They see the windows you want to upgrade. They make great suggestions. And you need to hurry, though, because face-to-face consults are filling up for the holidays. Get your free face-to-face consultation by clicking the face-to-face button at blinds.com. I'm joined by Dr. Michael Shermer, who's editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine, and by Dr. Stephen Meyer, who is the director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Dr. Shermer, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to what Dr. Meyer was saying right before the break. And part of what he was saying right before the break is, look, there are over 100 articles that he's presented in evidence from peer-reviewed journals that question elements or areas of Darwinism. Do you take the same position, Dr. Shermer, that Eugenie Scott does, a leading advocate of neo-Darwinism, that there are no weaknesses at all worth discussing in the Darwinian account?
Yeah, I think, see, when it's phrased that way, I mean, who in the right mind would say there are absolutely zero problems with any theory in science? Of course, that's not true. A couple points of clarification. First, when we're talking about allowed in the classroom, we're talking about primarily public high school science classrooms. We're
right.
not talking about private schools
right,
can do whatever
right,
they
right,
want.
Right.
And most universities and colleges, professors have a lot of leeway to teach what they want without there being problems. So we're really talking about a narrow slice here of culture and education. And then,
in fairness, the overwhelming majority of Americans go to public high school. It's over 90% of high school diplomas come
right.
from public high schools. So it's not a narrow slice.
That's
it's everybody.
That's why textbook publishers cater to those. But okay, so one solution is a market solution, that as textbook publishers lose power over those kinds of markets because of things like the iTunes model for publishing textbook chapters that can be modified in real time and breaking those down into smaller units in which nobody has too much power. That's one solution. And then you just let the market of ideas sort these things out. Say, for example, something like in physics, there's all sorts of problems with the general theories of physics. For example, we don't know what 95% of the universe consists of, this dark energy, dark matter. These are just linguistic placeholders for describing things we don't yet understand. And so should we teach the controversy? Should we teach the weaknesses in these theories of physics? Of course. It's already done. You don't have to tell people and legislate, teach the controversy. It's already done, of course. Anybody responsible would point those things out. And so I claim that anybody teaching, say, biological evolution or biology class would, of course, point out that there's interesting controversies in how genomes produce protein chains that produce body parts and things like that. There's all sorts of interesting debates about that goes on. But what happens in the language of sort of the legal dispute about it, you know, teach the controversy or teach both sides or whatever, it's couched in a way that it makes it seem like Darwinians have zero tolerance for anybody saying anything that's even remotely disputative of the Darwinian model or whatever. And that's just not true. What Eugenie Scott, in particular, and her group is fighting against, is the introduction of religious beliefs into the models, the belief that there's a supernatural entity at some point that reaches in and stirs the particles to create complex life or consciousness or whatever it is.
Okay,
that's where the objection comes in by people like that.
Okay, is that accurate in your understanding, Stephen Meyer?
Well, it really is not accurate as to what's happening in these state board of education controversies. What happened in Texas was that Eugenie Scott's group in particular turned out, along with other pro-Darwin lobbies, to prevent a really basic common sense science education policy of encouraging students to learn about the strengths and weaknesses and to be able to critically evaluate the tenets of scientific theories. And they wanted to exempt Darwinism from that and give it a special kind of ideological status, which I think actually, ironically, if their concern is about keeping religion out of the public schools, what they were actually advocating was treating Darwinian evolution as a kind of religion, or at least the worst caricature of religion in which there's no questioning allowed. So I like Michael's basic common sense intuitions, but I think unfortunately they're not accurate to the facts. In addition, he and I do disagree about the status of evolutionary theory. The problems with evolutionary theory are not, in my view, just niggly things around the edges. And Medved, you had me on to talk about my book Darwin's Doubt, where I detail a number of these things. But there is a lot of very considerable skepticism about evolutionary theory being expressed in the peer-reviewed literature. And I think students should be allowed to know about that. And the force of the Texas recommendations in their TEKS, they were called, the Texas Education Standards, was precisely to protect teachers who wanted to expose students to criticisms of the theory, because what happens with groups like the National Center for Science Education, in fact, this is what happened in Texas. They treated the phrase strengths and weaknesses as if it were a stalking horse for religion or creationism, and they pressured the board to take that phrase out because they said it was equivalent to teaching the biblical account of creation. There was no one in Texas who wanted to teach the biblical account of creation.
And you don't, Steve.
That's not what we're advocating.
No, not okay. Let's
do think there's some really serious problems with Darwinism that students
need to
know about. Why
would you not want to teach the strengths and weaknesses of physics?
I think you should.
Why is that never brought up?
Because no one. My guess would be because nobody ever opposes it.
Because there is not an ideological attempt to oppose doing so. Exactly right. But there is. It's the ideology is coming from the Darwinist camp. It's not coming from those of us who want to see good science pedagogy, which involves teaching controversies, teaching unsolved problems, teaching critiques. I think you should do that even historically. When you go back and when you teach the theory of gravity, the fantastically interesting story about how Newton's understanding of gravity replaced an earlier theory called the vortex theory, how that was later supplanted by Einstein's view of fields, and now we have gravitons. I mean, science is constantly in a state of flux. This is one.
Okay,
of the
gentlemen, slow down. Let's just see before we go to a break, and we're just coming up to a break quickly, and let's see if we can get focused and direct answers on just a couple of things. Do both of you agree that it would be out of place to use the Bible in a high school physics class?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Do you both agree that it would be perfectly appropriate to use in a high school biology class Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt?
No, I wouldn't, because it's been severely critiqued by professionals in the field. I mean, there's just pretty much every review.
Do you think that Darwin's Doubt, Stephen's book, should be banned from discussion?
No, not
even.
Banned. Not okay. The way books get.
Okay,
selected,
wait, hold on, just, hold on. We'll come back. We've got to come up to a break. This is the way it works. Michael, you'll be able to clarify quickly when we come back.
Michael Medved.
Four minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, just before the break, had reached agreement that high school biology classes or science classes should not include the Holy Bible. That's something that Stephen Meyer agrees with. That's something that Michael Shermer agrees with in this debate in our Science and Culture Hour. And right before the break, Michael Shermer, you were saying that you don't believe it would be appropriate for a high school biology teacher to, say, take a chapter of Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt, and have kids consider that. Now, why not?
Okay, well, first of all, I guess rephrasing it that way, I suppose you could say as an exercise in critical thinking and looking at, say, literature search about all the paleontologists and geologists who have debunked that book, you just go to Amazon.com, you can read the reviews, they're overwhelmingly pretty critical. But why that book? I mean, there's 100 other creationist books or intelligent design books or whatever category you want to call it.
Just say a teacher wants to choose it. Would there be anything wrong with that? See, what I'm trying to get to here is, do you believe that a teacher should have a broad latitude in teaching biology, or do you believe that that should be constricted to an affirmation of Darwinism?
Well, they don't have unlimited time. They can't teach, like, say, the 100 different alternative theories to evolution. Now, you have Stephen on the show, so of course we're talking about his particular one, but there's 100 other alternative versions to Darwin that are not accepted by mainstream science. So what's a teacher to do? You have, 15 weeks to cover the subject. You have, 30 different topics you have to cover. You have, 3 hours to cover, genetics. How many of the alternative theories of genetics do you have time to cover? It's just, so what teachers end up doing is teaching what's just pretty much mainstream acceptance. So the burden is on the person with the alternative theory to make it into the mainstream, not
okay,
for teachers
you're dodging the question, Michael.
You are dodging the question.
It's a direct.
End up in classroom.
I understand. Theoretically, you're dodging the question. If you were a principal at a school and you found out a teacher was assigning a chapter of Stephen Meyer's book, a teacher in a biology class, would you call that teacher in and say this is inappropriate?
Well, it would need to be a geology class.
Okay, allowed in geology, but not biology. Okay, quick comment for Stephen Meyer.
Well, first of all, my book addresses a bunch of very formidable biological challenges to neo-Darwinism, and the challenges that I describe in the central chapters of the book are actually challenges you find developed by other evolutionary biologists in peer-reviewed biology journals. And this is what I think Michael was concealing from the audience, is that there is a very a formidable challenge to the core, the so-called mainstream theory is no longer mainstream, and it's being recycled as if it were so.
Okay, let's go, if we can, to a caller, to Michael. That's a third Michael on the air with us. This Michael in Hawthorne, California, with Michael Shermer and Stephen Meyer. Hello, Michael.
She being the third Michael on the air.
Yep, that's you.
My question is actually to Dr. Shermer, and it sounds to me like most of the objections he's raised, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, are having to do with the fact that he's worried or maybe concerned that scientists who are proponents of ID are somehow looking at the evidence or are looking at the evidence through the lens of their ideologies or religious views, and so it's subjective. It's not objectively scientific. It's not done in an objective way. So my question is it at all possible, or would he admit, that someone who has an opposing religious view, say atheism, or that just they don't believe in God, could have the same kind of subjective ability to look at the evidence?
Okay, great question. Quick answer. Michael Shermer.
Also be liberals or political conservatives. It's just irrelevant when you're doing science, when you're publishing, when you're presenting a paper at a scientific conference. It's irrelevant whether you're a theist or atheist. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. It doesn't make any difference at all on the experiments you're running or the data you're presenting.
Okay.
But that's what should be taught is just the science. So if, say, Stephen Myers managed to convince the majority of paleontologists that their interpretation of the Cambrian slow fuse or explosion, whatever you want to call it, is incorrect, then by all means, yes, let's teach it.
We'll continue the teaching and the debate right here with Michael Shermer and Stephen Meyer You can find out more. Go to michaelmedved.com. Click on the Science and Culture banner. We'll be right back.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955-1776.
And on the Michael Medved Show, we will have continued debate on somewhat related subjects to what we're talking about right now tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, I'm back home in the Seattle area, and I am going to be joining Stephen Meyer, plus our good friends Dennis Prager and George Gilder at an outstanding event that is taking place at Cedar Park Assembly. And folks can find out about it at our website. It is going to be a remarkable event about creativity in the cosmos and why it matters, if it does. That will be open for free exchanges of ideas. And by the way, Stephen, would I be correct that if there are people who are bothered by the entire concept of talking about creativity in the cosmos, they should be free to come out and express themselves in a polite and respectful manner?
Absolutely. They can be skeptical about intelligent design or proponents of Darwinism. It doesn't matter. But, of course, we're going to be talking about the importance of creativity in the realm of economics as well as in the realm of nature. So we're going to be making some interdisciplinary connections with George Gilder talking about his book, Knowledge and Power, as well as me talking about the concept of intelligent design.
Well, I'm sure Michael Shermer will want to make a special trip out to the Great Northwest to join us. Let's go to Wendell right here in Philadelphia, where I'm broadcasting from today. Wendell, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Shermer and Dr. Meyer.
So Michael, the one comment I would like to make is Michael said that the only discussion with intelligent design is political or religious, and I would like to disagree with that, because everything on this planet is symbiotic, meaning that everything needs everything to exist, even down to the very cell. And that's very scientific, and it blows evolution out of the water, because nothing could ever evolve without everything else.
Michael Shermer, quick response.
Reminds me of, I just had a conference with Deepak Chopra, who has an alternative theory of consciousness that he calls quantum consciousness. He thinks quantum physics explains consciousness. And he's very frustrated, like Stephen Meyer is, that he can't get his views into the mainstream. Why isn't this taught in, you know, in mainstream psychology and neuroscience? And the reason is because hardly any scientists accept it. He's got to just do more work, more heavy lifting, to convince the scientific community that his theory is right. So although we're discussing intelligent design here, there's 100 alternative theories, 1,000 in all of the branches of science together. Teachers cannot simply fill a semester with nothing but alternative theories. At some point, they have to teach what most mainstream scientists think is true. And the burden is on the people on the margins, the renegades and rebels and so on, some of which who may be right.
Okay, let's response from Stephen Meyer.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I'm not frustrated. We're building a wonderful community, research community of scientists who are questioning the status quo view. Michael Shermer keeps referring to the majority of scientists, and then we're criticizing the status quo view on Darwinian evolution. And citing scientists whom we criticize as disagreeing does not constitute a definitive refutation. What it instead proves is that there's a real debate, and we want students to know about that debate. And the theory of intelligent design that I'm formulating, which we're not actually asking for that to be taught in the schools. We'd be quite satisfied to have states allow teachers to teach scientific criticisms of Darwinism and leave the matter there. But on the question of intelligent design, this is not a religiously based theory. It's based on scientific evidence, discoveries about, for example, the information content of DNA and the circuitry that you need to build animals, and it's also there's plenty of peer-reviewed scientific articles and books in support of it. So we're building an alternative perspective that is challenging the mainstream, and that is itself part of the nature of the controversy. So just simply citing what the mainstream says in response to the arguments and books and articles that we are producing doesn't constitute a refutation. It really shows the need to expose students to at least some of that controversy, and the controversy we suggest that they learn about is the controversy over the adequacy of Darwinism. That's what's being taught in the schools. We think that they should know the evidence that allows them to assess the status of the theory, not just the evidence that supports the theory.
Let's go quickly to Dave in Bellingham, Washington. Dave, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Michael and Stephen. Hello, Dave.
Proven, and intelligent design is visible everywhere. What's wrong with keeping in the debate that a higher power created everything, whether you're an atheist or not? Because if God did create everything and we proved him that he didn't, wouldn't we be stupid?
Stephen Meyer, you want to respond to that?
I think that people don't realize, Michael Shermer just also said that there were all these thousands of views. The debate about design is something that Darwin himself brought into focus. He said that living things look as though they were designed, but they aren't really designed because there's an unguided, undirected process that produced the appearance of design. Intelligent design, the theory of intelligent design, takes the opposite view and says, no, the appearance of design, there are certain features of living systems that are best explained by an actual designing intelligence. So there's two basic views. There's the no design view, the design is just an appearance, and the idea that design is real. And I think that's a debate that's not going to go away. It's not possible to suppress that, even if you have policy statements in the public schools that prevent people from talking about it.
Michael Shermer.
So we don't dispute that there's design. Clearly, there's design. The design is believed to be from the bottom up by natural forces only. But by way of example, yet another controversy. We just published an article about this guy named Neil Adams, who has a theory of the expanding Earth, that the reason the continents are moving away from each other is because the Earth is expanding. Now, this was a plausible theory in the 1950s, since debunked. Nobody accepts it anymore. He's now made an internet viral video that's viewed by millions of people, and so we had to address it. Why is this guy not being taught in public schools? Again, there's 100. Lynn Margulis's theory of symbiogenesis. She was on the fringes and margins for decades, but finally got her views widely accepted because her lab produced so much evidence for it that it became part of the mainstream. So.
Okay, we will get to this. And is intelligent design, is Dr. Stephen Meyer's work part of the mainstream or on the fringe? We'll get a response from Dr. Meyer. And more from Michael Shermer coming up.
Portions of the Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
And on the Michael Medved Show, join me tonight if you're in the Philadelphia area for the JPC Jewish Policy Center event. That is taking place in Wynnewood, Pennsylvania. You can check it out at our website at michaelmedved.com. Speaking for a few moments more on this Science and Culture Hour with Steve Meyer. He is the director of the Center for Science and Culture Discovery Institute. And speaking also to Michael Shermer, who is the editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine. They're both prolific authors. They're both both have PhDs. And let me go back to Stephen Meyer. Before, Michael Shermer made the point that there are all kinds of wacky theories in science. There are even people, they send me their material, heaven help us, every month at Conspiracy Day, who believe that the Earth really is flat. Why is he wrong in saying that your work and the work of your colleagues belongs in that category?
Well, first of all, the critiques that I'm making of neo-Darwinism are now mainstream. They're also being made by leading evolutionary biologists. And what his characterization of the debate overlooks is that there really is no accepted evolutionary theory. In my book, I look at six new theories that have been proposed to replace neo-Darwinism. Almost no one accepts neo-Darwinism, but that's precisely what Michael would like us to continue to teach. And in addition, intelligent design, the argument that I'm making for intelligent design, a new view, which may not be mainstream, but it is based on evidence. And we don't determine the truth of a theory in science by a vote. We determine it by we determine the truth by assessing its ability to explain the evidence. So I would just appeal to the listening audience to read the book to decide whether you think the theory is true, and also read the articles that I've written in response to these alleged authoritative critics, many of which have been posted on our online magazine, evolution.org, or evolutionnewsandviews.org, because the debate is essentially the debate about the origin of biological information, and we do not think that the evolutionary side has given an adequate account for the origin of the information you need to build the new animals that we see arising so suddenly in the history of life.
Okay, Dr. Shermer, you get the last word. Dr. Shermer, the author of Why Darwin Matters.
Thank you. So I would just recommend readers go to, listeners go to skeptic.com or, and type in Stephen Meyer, and you'll find a review of his new book, Darwin's Doubt, and where we show that he compresses a long span of about 80 million years into a much shorter time span, which would then seemingly require more miraculous intervention of a designer type to make those kinds of complex leaps, when in fact that's not actually required. The 80 million years that the Cambrian explosion actually consists
15
of,
seconds more, Dr. Shermer.
Can easily be explained by Darwinian processes. So science rules. Science is the best tool we have. Let's teach it as best we can. And of course, we should keep an open mind and consider all views. Evidence is the bottom line.
And I think everyone can agree on that proposition as the right way to exercise free speech, one of the glories of this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.